This public radio podcast is supported by the Society for Human Resource Management, meeting the challenges of a changing world, online at shrm.org, and by KeyBank Capital Markets, specializing in corporate and investment banking solutions for established and growing mid-sized companies. Visit key.com/KBCM.
If you think you're paying a lot for gas...
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From American Public Media in Los Angeles, I'm Scott Jagow. Try driving a truck in Britain. Diesel now costs $9 a gallon. $9, not pounds. Today, hundreds of drivers rolled into London and parked their trucks on the highway. This, of course, created a massive traffic jam. It's their way of getting the British government's attention. Trucking companies want the government to lower fuel taxes. Fuel surcharges are going up everywhere. Starting today, tickets for Disney cruises, for example, cost $8 more. But as Jeff Tyler reports, cruise lines and airlines are not in the same boat.
Disney is the last of the major cruise lines to tack on a fuel surcharge. Royal Caribbean and Carnival have been doing it for months. Are these additional costs having any effect on passenger logs? Warren Miller covers the industry for Morningstar.
It's not going to have much of an impact on consumers' attitudes at all. Cruise lines have historically been viewed as a great value vacation, where you get a lot of bang for your buck.
But the opposite is true for the airline industry, where consumers are getting less bang for the buck. Many airlines charge a base price for a seat and extra for additional services. American Airlines broke ground with its new fees for each checked bag. Miller says airlines hope such a la carte fees will help reduce sticker shock when consumers shop for fares.
And if they're looking online to buy their tickets and they're seeing a price that's $100 more than what they're used to, they're going to turn it down right there.
He says Allegiant Air has been successful with this a la carte business model, and he expects other airlines will follow suit. I'm Jeff Tyler for Marketplace.
Oil prices and home prices are going in opposite directions. An index out this morning says home prices fell 14% in the first quarter. That's the biggest drop since the Case-Shiller index started in 1988. But stocks are bouncing back a little bit this morning. The Dow is up 34 points to 12,514. The NASDAQ has gained 20 points already. The S&P 500 is up 4. In Asia today, the markets gained about 1%. European shares are down just a fraction. One of the country's biggest philanthropies will announce a new gift today for biomedical research. The Howard Hughes Medical Institute is giving $600 million to a group of 56 scientists. Jeremy Hobson has more on what this means.
When it comes to funding medical research, the top dog is still the federal government, specifically the National Institutes of Health and its nearly $30 billion budget. But NIH funding has been flat since 2004, and David Farb of Boston University's School of Medicine says scientists are increasingly looking elsewhere for dollars.
Scientists are looking in all kinds of nooks and crannies for funding. Now, the Howard Hughes is hardly a nook or a cranny. It's more like Niagara Falls.
And like the Falls, the Hughes Institute wants to be a magnet for daredevils, hoping its money can be used for ambitious, even risky research. Farb says that's one big advantage of private research funding in general.
It's freer from congressional oversight. It's freer from directives other than the purpose of ultimately the best science.
In Washington, I'm Jeremy Hobson for Marketplace.
Maybe Mattel should come up with a new line for Barbie. Courtroom fashions. Today, Barbie's lawyers go to court for a trademark infringement trial. Mattel accuses the maker of the Bratz dolls, MGA Entertainment, of stealing the idea for Bratz. Stacey Vanek Smith tells us what's at stake.
Barbie's small and so petite.
Petite, maybe, but Barbie's been the 800-pound gorilla of the doll industry for about 50 years. The plastic princess is worth an estimated $1.25 billion.
Barbie was so unchallenged that it was considered impossible to take it on.
That's toy industry consultant Richard Gottlieb. He says the phenomenal success of Bratz, which debuted in 2001, was a major coup.
Move over, queen. We're on the throne.
But Mattel claims Bratz's creator was working for Mattel when he came up with the multi-ethnic belly-flashing rebel chicks. Original sketches of Bratz are being forensically tested to see when they were drawn. Why would Mattel go to all this trouble when Barbie sales are more than double Bratz's? Again, Gottlieb.
Both Bratz and Barbie have been really struggling the last 2 years. If you're losing market share in a shrinking market, that's not good.
Barbie's already tried to take back its turf with Barbie Flavas. Sinking its fingernails into Bratz would put the rivalry to rest. I'm Stacey Vanek-Smith for Marketplace.
You're listening to The Morning Report for Tuesday, May 27th on Marketplace.org. Today, a trade delegation from Texas is headed to Cuba. Wait, something about that isn't quite right. Trade delegation from the United States to Cuba. Don't we have a trade embargo with Cuba? Dan Gretsch has more from our America's desk at WLRN.
Since 2000, U.S. agricultural and medical products have been exempted from the embargo. Over the past 7 years, Cuba has imported $2.7 billion worth of food from the U.S. Texas accounts for just 4% of that. Farmers, ranchers, and port representatives from the Lone Star State will make the 5-day trip. They're scheduled to meet with Cuban agriculture officials and visit 3 farms to identify the island's food needs. Texas Agriculture Commissioner Todd Staples organized the trip.
Obviously, the trip is based on food and not about politics, but establishing good trading relationships should be a cornerstone to have a dialogue about other issues in the future.
25 other states have sent their own trade delegations in recent years. The U.S. makes up just 1/5 of total food exports to Cuba, and U.S. farmers want a bigger piece of the pie. I'm Dan Gretsch for Marketplace.
Oil is trading at $133 a barrel this morning. That price has countries scrambling to find more oil. For example, in the Arctic Ocean. Several countries, including the U.S., meet in Greenland tomorrow to talk about exploring the Arctic. Stephen Beard has more from London.
Global warming and the melting of the polar ice cap have made the Arctic Ocean more accessible. No one can be certain just how much oil and gas lies beneath the ocean floor, but the 5 Arctic states, the U.S., Russia, Norway, Denmark, and Canada, are taking no chances. They have the right to lay claim to exploit certain portions of the ocean bed. Russia's been the most proactive. One of its submarine crews planted a flag on the sea floor last year. Other Arctic states are getting nervous. They meet in Greenland to air their concerns. Environmental campaigners like Mark Linus are dismayed.
I have to say I do begin to despair for humanity if our main response to the disappearance of the Arctic ice cap because of global warming is that we seek to drill for more oil there.
But it seems safe to say that with oil at more than $130 a barrel, the Arctic's potential hydrocarbon riches will not be ignored. In London, this is Stephen Beard for Marketplace.
Today we launch a new series of stories on the credit crunch. The scarcity of new bank loans has hit many small business owners very hard. The National Small Business Association says more than half its members have had trouble getting credit recently. Amy Scott looks at one company struggling to stay on track.
Go out slowly.
Rick Snow sends a racer on his way down an indoor go-kart track. Snow owns Maine Indoor Karting, just outside Portland. Back in the fall, he started noticing a drop in what he calls arrive-and-drive customers. People were still booking bachelor parties and corporate events, but the drop-in customers with a little extra cash in their pockets weren't showing up.
Our summer months are very strong usually, and then we see a drop-off in September and October anyway, so we're kind of planning for that. But when our business didn't really pick up a lot in November or December, we realized that maybe we're in more of a crunch than we had thought.
Meanwhile, Snow saw his costs rising, everything from the food for the cafe to the gas for the go-karts. His employee health insurance plan jumped 22% this year. To get by, he and his wife were forced to hire fewer staff and work longer hours. One big way to cut costs was to buy the building that houses the track. But they needed money for the down payment. So like a lot of small business owners, the Snows turned to their home.
We knew we'd have to apply for a mortgage on our home. and tap into the equity into our house.
And that's when Snow came face to face with the credit crunch. He and his wife had good credit and enough savings to make their monthly payments. But because their business was still getting off the ground, they couldn't prove a steady monthly income. With a so-called no-document loan, you don't have to. But because of abuses during the housing boom, these mortgages got the nickname liar loans. And when Snow applied for his mortgage in February, he hit a roadblock.
The Monday before our closing, the bank called and said, the state has just passed a law that won't allow us to do no-document mortgages. So we had to scramble and figure out, what are we going to do now?
What they did was eventually find a bank in Tennessee that would make the loan, but the delay cost them almost $18,000 in rent and other expenses, plus an extra 1% interest on their home loan.
It's an awful lot for small business.
Snow did find one bright spot in this whole mess. Thanks to the Federal Reserve slashing interest rates, he managed to lock in a low rate on his commercial mortgage. But traffic is still down at Maine Indoor Karting, and Snow says he's praying for a strong summer to get things back in gear. I'm Amy Scott for Marketplace.
In Beirut, the fighting has stopped for the moment. There's a new power-sharing agreement between the Lebanese government and the Hezbollah militants. You'd think real estate in a war-torn city like Beirut would be dirt cheap. But actually, homes and condos are pretty darn expensive. Foreign investors have started to notice. Ben Gilbert has more from Beirut.
Just 2 weeks ago, Hezbollah militiamen fought street to street in this West Beirut neighborhood using machine guns and rocket-propelled grenades. After the smoke cleared, the windows were blown out of high-rises on some streets, but the offices of Coldwell Banker stood unscathed, and business quickly resumed. Combat is normally not a good sign for real estate, but broker Mario Mahana says Lebanese investors see this as a buying opportunity.
There is a French proverb that says, you have to buy on the sound of the cannons and sell on the sound of the violins. And here they are applying this 100%. More things goes worse, they say this is an opportunity to buy.
Mohana volunteered to take me to an old Lebanese house near his office that he's renovating for a client. It cost around $2 million 1 year ago. It will be worth $6 million after renovation.
Like 10 days ago, there was fighting only about 3 blocks from here, and the price hasn't gone down at all.
Not at all. They didn't go down.
Without skipping a beat, Mohana resumes his tour.
You see, this is from here, the facade, the main facade, which is wonderful. This will become a garden.
Mohana is unshakably optimistic, but it seems for good reason. Real estate prices have risen by at least 30% here in the last few years. Some areas have seen prices double. Mohana isn't really worried about renewed fighting, but he does have limits.
Don't buy without a parking.
Without parking?
No parking, you will never be able to sell it again. This is a must now.
Mohana has done his homework. Throughout Lebanon's civil war, property prices rarely went down. Ashraf Kojok, the manager at Coldwell Banker's West Beirut office, says rich Gulf Arabs love Lebanon, as do the millions of Lebanese overseas who earn salaries in strong euros and buy Lebanese real estate in cheap dollars. In Beirut, I'm Ben Gilbert for Marketplace.
This weekend, China outlaws those thin plastic grocery bags. You know, scientists say they're dangerous to wildlife, but not many countries have banned them so far. In the U.S., the only city that has done it is San Francisco, which imposed restrictions last month. In Los Angeles, I'm Scott Jagow. Thanks for listening.
American Public Media.